a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
On a Thursday morning here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We are live here inside the Emden Studios. And joining us, as they do every single week for the MGO Blog Roundtable, is the crew. Starting off first with the man himself from MGO Blue or MGO Blog, excuse me.
MGO Blog.
That'd be quite a slow reversal.
Can you imagine?
Wow.
From MGO Blog, Brian Cook, here on the MGO Blog Roundtable. How are you this morning, Brian?
I'm good.
All right. Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Ed, how are you doing this morning, man?
I'm good, Sam. How are you?
This is a good time with the Super Bowl rolling around, right?
Yeah, we got Super Bowl. Starting to think about March Madness. Okay. Yeah, good time here.
All right. And we have Craig Ross on the phone over there in Hawaii. Craig, did you make it to the Polynesian Bowl?
I did not make it to the Polynesian Bowl. That was on a different island.
Okay.
You make it sound like you were so far away. We're in Michigan. We're far away. You're like, oh, another island. That's still, like, really close.
You can swim, Craig. Come on. You got to get that morning exercise.
You can't swim. Maybe you can swim. I can't swim that far. But, yeah, you could do it. But, no, I didn't make the Polynesian Bowl.
All right. Well, no problem. No problem, Craig. Yeah. Certainly a lot to get into today, guys, starting off first with Michigan football. You know, two big news items for Michigan. Let's start off first with the fact that they're going to Rome, man. I mean, this is just the ultimate how you like me now to the NCAA.
Yeah, it is. And I very much appreciate the timing of the announcement where they wait for them to vote, like, oh, you can't do this on spring break. And Jim Harbaugh's like, well, our semester ends in the middle of April. So it was a beautiful middle finger.
Yeah, and you know what? This one seems bulletproof to me. I mean, I don't see...
They mentioned orphans in the release. They're like, they're daring them.
Yeah,
like,
how can you, even if you don't, even if you cut out, like you said, the orphans and go into the Vatican.
And the Pope.
Right.
The Pope.
If you cut that out and you look at the fact that they've allowed college basketball to do this for years, how could you then come back to football and say, oh, no, you can't do this?
Well... Basketball teams are limited to once every 4 years.
Once every 4 years. And I do think that Michigan will have to, there'll be some that a similar restriction put on them,
yeah,
I think.
Next year. It's like, what, like the annual like Harbaugh rule.
Right. So for the next couple of years, yeah, they'll have a foreign trip, but then it'll probably be once every 4 years.
Yeah, probably. And then, I mean, because Michigan's semester does end so early, they could go back down to Florida after a April 15th spring game, because that would not be a vacation period for them. It's a different semester. It's not.
Say what?
So they go to
Florida and Rome?
Well, in different years.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Not at the same time. What okay. I'm saying is, like, they banned going during spring break.
Right.
They did not ban, like, going during the... I mean, Michigan has, like, a summer semester,
mm-hmm,
and they didn't ban that. So they could hypothetically do that even when they are restricted from going to Zanzibar.
Think about it, though, guys. I mean, we talk about all the dollars that go into big time college athletics, right? And many of those dollars go to facilities. They go to coaching salaries. They go to administrator salaries now as well. And in the discussion about athlete compensation, there's only so much that you can add to it with cost of scholarship and whatnot. What they get has stayed relatively flat. This is a way that you're giving back in multiple ways. I mean, this is giving back as close to monetarily as you can, because they are taking an overseas trip. Mm-hmm. It's an enriching academic experience.
Yep.
I mean, I've never been overseas. I don't know about you guys, but this is an amazing opportunity for the guys on this football team.
And an amazing recruiting tool, too.
And you can expense a trip to Rome, Sam.
Way ahead of you, Brian. Way ahead of you, man. Already there. Already there. But, hey, but it's, again, I mean, you know, they're encouraging the guys to stay and study abroad. This is Jim Harbaugh thinking way outside the box and raising the bar in a way that I actually want to see other programs try. This is, I mean, there are things you do you don't want to see other programs do, right?
Right.
Because it gives you this competitive advantage. But this is actually something that I would like to see other programs try to do.
Well, you know, what about the walk-ons, though? Like, I don't think they can pay for the walk-ons. So I mean,
I didn't think about that.
I mean, there's a reason. I talked to a walk-on recently, and he's like, I mean, we're going to Rome, but, like, I don't know if I can afford it. And I was like, oh, that sucks.
Right, right.
But what are you going to do?
Yeah. But it is, as you said, Ed, it is a fantastic recruiting. Now, you know, Harbaugh has been very clear in saying, hey, you know, it's not recruiting. It's a byproduct, though. We can say it's a byproduct. When you go into a living room, let's use Aubrey Solomon for instance. You sit in Aubrey Solomon's living room and you say, we are not just growing you on the football field. We are growing you as a man. And we in an effort to do that is not just, you know, the impact program and the academic enrichment on campus. We are taking you to another country to broaden your horizons. That speaks on the recruiting trail, I think.
Yeah, I can't imagine it hurts.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I can't imagine that it doesn't move the meter. I think it does. I think it moves. It's going to move the meter every single time. Now, I'm not saying it's going to get you a guy, but it's going to resonate.
Right, and you got a couple years before Alabama and Clemson start doing it, so there's a little bit of
You think Nick Saban
there.
Would do it?
Why not?
No.
Why wouldn't he?
Because it's not, like, laser-focused on the one thing that he cares about.
Because you would have to, you'd be doing it because Harbaugh did.
Yeah, that's another good point.
Well,
aren't some schools
you don't think
doing
he's gonna
signing
start?
Of the stars?
Who else,
isn't that going on?
Who else is doing signing of the stars?
Iowa is.
Iowa, I think. Maybe Northwestern, but I know Iowa for sure.
You don't think Nick Saban's going to...
It's amazing that Iowa...
I know.
I just...
Well, they're doing something from their facility. It's not like it's a signing of the stars, but they're doing some sort of an online announcement program.
Okay.
You don't think Nick Saban's going to pull an NFL coach from the NFL ranks and give him $1 million to be on a staff as an assistant head coach in the next couple years?
Oh, well, hey, that's not abnormal, though, is it?
But he's not... But Nick Saban's not taking his team to
Europe.
Because as we talked about earlier, and you guys just said... On election day, he wouldn't even have a five-minute conversation with his team about the civics of voting because it's not football, and it's got to be football-focused, football all the time.
Right,
for
right. But if he's gonna, I mean, if he's gonna make like a hire that mimics what Jim Harbaugh just did with Pep Hamilton.
Oh no, the hire, that's a football thing. But the trip, he'll never do because there's too much non-football involved.
Okay, but it's not because he doesn't want to do it because
no, it's because there's not enough because it's too non-football for him.
I think
Dabo would.
I think not doing it also.
No, Dabo said he won't. He already said it.
Because
he was
Harbaugh,
asked about it. He said he said it's a great idea, but he won't take his teams to Europe.
Yeah, look, it could be. You could say, hey,
you get a lot of
you can say, hey,
South Carolina.
We want you to practice. We want you to practice in Wembley Stadium. Is football? It's football the whole week, and you know some sort of sponsorship involved. And I bet you, even with all of that. For Nick Saban to do something that Harbaugh did, I just think it'd be important to him.
Like, I buy more your argument that he wouldn't do it because it's not a football thing, but then you got to tell me why Dabo won't do it. He just doesn't want his kids to have the European experience.
Say Dabo wouldn't do it.
Dabo's like, you know, these kids, I'm out. Like,
he
okay,
already talked
right,
about
sure.
it. He was asked about it at the Senior Bowl, and he said he's not going to Europe. He's not taking his kids on a trip.
Ever?
That's what it made it sound like. But he also was confused because he said, I'm not taking my kids away from their spring break. And we know it's not during spring break.
During spring break.
But he said he's not taking the trip.
Well, this is actually something that might be unique to Michigan's schedule. Because Michigan doesn't have a significant winter break. You know, you're back in class on the 4th of January. So their semester ends really early. When I was in college, it was an opportunity to have an extra month of an internship. Because I was a computer engineer, they paid, which is awesome. But a lot of schools are going to be still in class for another month after Michigan has the option to do this. So by banning it during spring break, they've kind of boxed in the other schools who don't have the same kind of schedule Michigan does.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, I said I've been bullish in making it clear that I think that Michigan should spend.
Yeah.
Because
it's the way,
but I don't see there is.
I agree with you, Sam.
There's a segment of the fan base that you know just is a little bit turned off by how much money it is spent. You know, you're spending all this money to go here and spending all this money on coaches and three coaches making over $1 million. And to me, number one, that horse is out of the barn.
Yeah.
You are not going to be able to. It's not like you're going to go from collecting $50+ million from the Big Ten Network to, you know, scaling that back. Or it's not like the billions of dollars that the NCAA brings in from the NCAA tournament is going to be given back. That money is coming in. It's only going to grow. So mm-hmm. where is it going to be spent?
Right.
And if you're Michigan, to me, this is the way you compete with teams that cheat.
Yeah.
You first push every limit you can within the rules. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do everything you can within the rules. Try to find every interpretation that's beneficial to you. And then when it comes to spending on facilities, spending on coaches, spending on European trips, damn well better do it. Because that's how you level the playing field as much as possible with the guys that are paying under the table.
And I completely agree. This is an arms race. And, I mean, if you want to complain about the coaches' salaries, I kind of get that a little bit more than complaining about giving these kids a European experience, taking them to, like, the cradle of civilization. In Rome, like that's a great learning experience, right? And if you can give these kids that, well, I mean, what's the big deal?
And I just don't understand
that. How can
the only
it's for the children,
right? And I guess the only gripe that I find legitimate when you talk about coaching salaries, because I think they are what they are. The market, this is what the market dictates. My issue is that the flow of dollars seems to be going all in a few directions, and the athletes, the compensation for the athletes isn't commensurate with what they're helping bring in. Now, I don't know the remedy to that.
I don't know how you
fix that.
Drop amateurism, maybe?
Maybe that is the ultimate answer. But what are they going to do in the short term?
Yeah, but I'm not to open up the can of worms, but as Brian says, drop amateurism. But Sam, what was the article I was reading to you during one of the breaks about the $36 million subsidy that Rutgers gets? Mm-hmm. And I know it's probably not the best example because Rutgers is generally a joke, but Rutgers is a big a state university that loses money in sports. So if you look at the handful of schools that could actually pay their players, that's a very small number. Yep. It's a very small number.
Yeah, so I want to make it clear. I think the compensation for student athletes should be greater than it is, but I don't know how to fix that right now. And in the interim, if you got to pay to get coaches, pay to get damn coaches.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just you have defensive coordinators who are making $1.5 million, and like, remember Bo back in the day when he was like, oh my God, this is a life changing amount of money that he turned down from A&M, and it's like the amount of cash that the kids are getting is totally flat, and it's like, how's that
right?
Sustainable?
Oh, and I agree. Like, I agree with you.
When the head coach is making $100,000, okay, fine. Like, there's not enough money to pay the kids. I understand that. When you have three different coaches making $1 million a year, it's like, well, that's especially because I don't want to get into this. But they have a very valuable skill that is extremely time limited, and with an NFL career that lasts on average maybe 3-4 years. Literally half of their productive ability to utilize the skill is being wasted in a system where they don't actually get compensated for it.
Well, they get compensated, but
not commensurate with the amount of money that they're making.
So. Right. I hear you.
But I've said this a thousand times.
Craig Ross, do you have a solution, man?
I have no solution to the compensation issue, and I haven't heard a great suggestion yet. There's probably something.
Just legalize Bagman.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to give a kid money to go to a school, fine. I don't see a problem with that.
Like, there has to be some
if Al Glick wants to give Aubrey Solomon $500,000, it's no skin off my nose. I'm not. You're laughing. It's not a joke.
I understand that Brian believes that, and I'm not saying it's absolutely crazy, but I'm not sure in the end that the system will, that such a system would even endure. And I have questions whether 5 years down the road from just saying it's a completely laissez-faire system and everyone can throw what, you know, whatever money they want at whatever player they want.
Yeah,
Michigan is good at throwing money at people.
A system that people would really like very much and might kill the sport.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think you need to have some regulatory body. It won't end corruption. It won't end cheating, but you have to at least have an attempt.
Well, if everything's legal, you can't cheat.
I hear what you're saying, but when bedlam ensues and it's the wild, wild west.
Bedlam is already here. It is already the wild, wild west. And the only problem is that some schools are handicapping themselves by not playing the game because they have these thoughts of honor. And what is the honor in not paying someone what they're worth? I don't see it myself.
I hear you. You're right. The rules are being broken, but that there are rules in place. At least it's not, you know, as easy as it would be with the non-system that you're proposing.
What are we regulating?
You want some semblance of order.
I mean, why?
Well, because I mean, I think that as Craig just pointed out, I think that the support for the sport.
I mean, that's what they said about free agency and baseball. I mean, you see the NFL, like, they just move teams to Los Angeles for no reason and they get away with it.
No reason? I don't know about no reason.
No, the reason is that they threw a hissy fit because, San Diego wouldn't pay for a stadium. Like, you are the NFL.
There's also the reason that they're going to make more money in Los Angeles, too.
Well, so...
it's a bigger market.
You're a San Diego Chargers fan, like, and...
you're going to drive to L.A. to go to the games.
No, you're not.
You might.
Well, I don't know. If I was a San Diego Chargers fan, I'd be done. I'd be like, all right, San Diego State, let's go. Because I know they're not moving. So the NFL, I don't understand why anyone's an NFL fan, honestly, especially the Lions. But that's another conversation.
Because people like Sam raised their sons like Quincy to be Lions fans.
No, what are you doing?
This model, and I know we didn't mean to go off on this tangent, but this model that you're proposing. So
what are the downsides?
So Al Glick says I'm going to pay you $500,000 to sign with Michigan, and then you know Ed says I'm going to pay you $600,000 to sign with Stanford. So there's this bidding war.
Ed's doing what?
And how do you ensure that this how do you ensure the kid is going to sign? How do you ensure he's going to get the money? I mean, where's I just think that the regulation.
Well, there's already a body of U.S. contract law. I mean, like the system of the country.
You're talking about kids signing. So basically, they're professionals at this point.
I mean, sure. What the heck? I don't care.
So they're signing actual contracts.
Like to me, the key thing.
And they're a labor force.
About college, I think they're a labor force now. I think the key thing about college is that they go to college. Like, it's not that they don't get paid, right? Mm-hmm. It's like they're part of the student body. They're in my wife's classes. They're there to listen to me drone on when Bacon invites me to a class, and they're part of the institution. It's not the fact that they're also poor for no reason. So,
hey, man, I have my opinions on amateurism and what it's rooted in, and I think it's an antiquated concept.
Yeah,
But I do think that the model that it's the model that college football is based on, and I don't know that you could blow that up and still have college football be what it's become for us.
That I kind of got to disagree there. Like, what would it take to blow up college football?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know.
What would it take for the state of Alabama to be like, we're not interested?
Yeah, we're not interested in this. I mean, like, what? What could possibly do that?
Nothing.
Craig Ross? I mean.
Craig Ross could.
No, I mean, I was just kind of jumping on what Craig said earlier, whether the system's going to disintegrate. And, like, there's so much money. There's so much vested interest. There's such a passionate following of this game. I mean, brain injury? Is brain injury going to kill the sport? I don't think so. I just don't see it.
I'm not so sure. Is pro boxing what it was once?
Well, that's pro boxing's problems are its own. Like, it's not because that people got hurt. It's because that Don King was Don King. And
it's a cautionary tale because the whoever can give him the money kind of concept is what was at play in boxing. Well, you had a lot of money flowing around, a lot of people who had an opportunity to wield their influence on boxers, and that was one of the things that kind of turned people off, that the number of folks that you had wielding influence and dictating or determining the direction of the sport. Now, it also created all of these different sanctioning bodies,
right,
that you have all over the
so
well,
it's
yeah,
a mess.
You can have this we can create our own sanctioning body and have a championship over here.
It's a corrupt sport, and the Golden Boy guys don't play fight guys who are with HBO, and it's just a mess, right? So like you have all these fights that you could make, but because of the nature of the sport, you don't make, and that's not something that I think is.
See, but you don't think
it's unique to boxing.
You don't think fans were turned off by the wild, wild west atmosphere of boxing?
I'm not proposing that we like repeal all the rules that dictate the game, right? Like I think that the game would remain fine, but the fact that some guy's getting money, I think, would make them less susceptible to the kind of influence
right.
that you're talking
about. And I want to be clear. I'm not arguing, because we got to get to a break. We're past due. I'm not arguing that
this always
athletes,
happens when we get on this topic.
Right. I know that athletes shouldn't be paid more. I think they should. I'm saying that we need to figure out a system for having them receive these payments. I don't know what that is. I don't pretend to have the answer. I just know that the amount of attention being spent on it it's not enough.
Sure.
I mean, there's not enough emphasis on figuring out a way to give the athletes more.
I figured it out, though. So.
9:28 on a Thursday. When we come back on the other side, another big piece of Michigan news, a hire. Michigan went and hired a tackles and tight ends coach / run game coordinator in Greg Fry. We'll get the guy's thoughts on that on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket. On a Thursday here on the Michigan Insider, coming up next after our show is Inside the Huddle with Michael Spath. And then we have our show, the afternoon show, the M Zone, from 3 until 6, and I guess they're going to be out and about.
That's right. J-Mo and Marcus Reyes, so our fellows this afternoon, they will be on the road. They'll be at Suburban Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on the new one on Jackson that just opened up. So check out the new showroom, and of course you can heckle the heck out of Marcus and Jamie. And when in doubt, heckle Marcus. Maybe he'll break a chair.
Gotcha. All right. We have the MGO Blog roundtable crew with us. Brian Cook from MGO Blog, Ed Fang from the Power Rank, and Craig Ross, who has written a couple of great books, and hopefully we'll write another one, Craig.
Well, I'm writing an article for Brian right now. Actually, I just finished it. And one of the things I discovered in this article, I'm writing about the 1880s, was that there was a game in 1885 that isn't in the Michigan record books. And it was a game of Michigan against the Princess Team of Detroit. And it was a football game played in Ann Arbor on roller skates.
What?
And Michigan won the game, but if for some reason it's not anywhere in the Michigan record book.
Maybe because they were on roller skates.
Well, maybe, but look at it this way. Notre Dame, and this was the problem in the 1880s, was there were very few teams to play. In the entire decade, Michigan only played, I think, 25, 26 games. But in 1907, when there were plenty of teams to play, Notre Dame ducked the Fighting Methodists of Northwestern to play another team in Evanston, the St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store. And they include that. Notre Dame includes the game against the St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in their record book. So I say Michigan should include the game.
Well, but they probably weren't wearing roller skates.
So what did they do, play the thrift store employees? I mean, how did that work?
I don't know. Don't ask me. That's in the Notre Dame record book. I mean, aside from the fact that they have many wins against high school teams that they include, and that's not a joke. The Illinois light artillery they played, they ducked the heavy artillery, I guess. I don't know. But, so I say there's one more win in Michigan's record book that hasn't been included. And that's what I'm writing about for Brian Cook, which I'm sure he's incredibly excited about.
Can I put a picture of roller skates and Hail the Victors? Well, like a picture.
I'm sure the Bentley has something on it.
It is 9:35 on a Thursday. 734-998-1050. Let's go out to Cali and talk to Eddie. Eddie, good morning.
Hey, what's up, Roundtable? Greetings from the Golden State. How are you guys doing?
Good. Great. And yourself?
Good, good. Thanks a lot, man. I wanted to ask about the new coach. I know that's what you guys are leading up to, Coach Fry. Sam is convincing it's a good hire. Looks like a good hire. Earlier in the week, though, there was an interesting topic that came up on the show. I don't remember which guest it was that you guys had on, but the topic came up about the new running backs coach. I guess it's going to be
Jay Harbaugh.
Mm-hmm. The topic came up of, does he have credibility? Now, I don't want to downgrade the coach, but do you guys think that it could be used as negative recruiting? And do you guys think that the players, the kids, have confidence in Coach Jay? Because, again, I don't want to downgrade him, but check it out, man. You're going from Wheatley, who's got NFL credentials, who's got all-time Michigan Wolverines legend credentials, to, unless I'm mistaken, Sam, all-state high school credentials. You know what I'm saying? Again, I think he's cool. I don't want to downgrade him, but what do you guys think about that? Go Blue, screw Feinbaum.
I mean, I think it is something of a concern. One thing that you can do at running back is you can use grad assistants to get some of the technical details down. So even though Jay wasn't an NFL running back, I'm sure that there are going to be guys who have played the sport at that position and will be able to communicate with the running backs. I also wonder if we might see something where the 10th guy comes in. So there's a proposal that they'd add a 10th assistant coach because they're flush with money and they're like, what are we going to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens, Michigan might hire a running backs coach, and then you could see Jay do special teams, that kind of thing.
So go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, the other thing is, I mean, I recall some of these same concerns when Jay Harbaugh was first hired. There were a lot of people saying, oh, he's not a real coach, he's just Harbaugh's kid. Well, it didn't turn out that way. And so I'm unconcerned about this one. I think Jay Harbaugh has proven he has a role and a positive role in the program, and I think he'll probably do just fine as running backs coach. And yeah, you can use grad assistants, and as Brian points out, I think it's more than a proposal. I thought it happened.
Did it? But no, it has to be voted in the spring. Certainly the Division I Council came out for Student Athlete Advisory Committee came out for it. It's going to pass.
Yeah, so there's going to be a 10th coach anyway, so we'll see how they reorganize. So,
you know, in the short term, though, my take on it has been a little blind faith-based, but it's not totally blind, though, because it's based on Jim Harbaugh's track record.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he has made these coaching moves in his head coaching history that they just work out. And in this particular instance, are the kids going to have questions? I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll have some questions. I'm sure there will be a period where, there's a relationship building aspect of this, and then there's a technical, then you got to prove you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And so he'll have to jump those hurdles with these kids, but I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about it because of who it was that made the move. And I just don't think that if Jim Harbaugh had any doubts about this working, that he would have gone this route. Because there were running backs coaches out there available.
Mm-hmm.
There were running backs coaches that, I know a lot of coaches in the game. There were running backs coaches that were considered. So it's not like there were no viable candidates out there that he could have gotten. But he saw an opportunity with Greg Fry, who I think has done an outstanding job down there at IU. You look at how well they ran the football. You look at the gun run stuff that he might be able to help implement here at Michigan. I think that'd be a real asset. There is an opportunity to really add some technical expertise. And then also, strategically, a guy who has an idea of what's going on at Ohio State with Kevin Wilson, you're blocking Ohio State from coming to get him at some point. You have a guy that if something happens and Tim Drevno gets a head coaching job, which he's going to at some point, you got a built-in guy there. Strategically, this was a great move as well. So I'm just, because it's Jim, maybe if it was another coach that made this move, I would be a little more concerned. But it's one of those things that I say, hey, if a problem arises, then maybe I'll get a little concerned. But even then, you got Jim Harbaugh and a staff full of really good coaches. I think they'll figure a way through it.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about it than I thought I would be a couple years ago, because I was one of those guys who's like running backs, coaches, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you got tape of him at the satellite camp at Antioch coaching up Najee Harris and his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And Wheatley is like going like, okay, so what happens if this pass protection thing happens and the guy does this when you're... And he's like, you can't do this because he'll spin off you and that kind of thing. I'm like, this is very detailed. And I have a new respect for this position coaching concept.
Yeah, pass pro. And Cree had Chris Howard on yesterday, and he said that's the biggest thing he took from his position coaches was pass pro.
But on the other hand, it's kind of strange that so you have the offense, and you have five offensive linemen, which is almost half of your dudes, and you have one coach for them. And this is actually kind of a more equitable distribution of your coaches, because now you have like three guys for one guy and three guys for the other guy, and that makes some sense. Excuse me.
Right. And it's Michigan has done it that way. They've had that kind of split in the past.
They have, and Greg Fry himself has done a terrific job. I mean, you have Dan Feeney, you have Jason Spriggs at Indiana. They had some holes on their line this year, but they were starting a true freshman named Coy Cronk.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have the personnel. But their ability to move the ball on the ground with Indiana's recruiting, they had a couple of good backs in there.
And the thing that I think you got to pay attention to with Fry from a line recruiting perspective, I mean, Indiana's not going out and getting these guys, right? That Michigan is going to have. So Jason Spriggs was a tight end that he bulked up.
Yeah.
Dan Feeney was a short offensive tackle that he moved inside. Coy Cronk was a guy, I think he's from West Lafayette. I think Purdue didn't even look at that guy, and he went in and got him. So he's shown this eye for line talent. Now you're deep, you're broadening his pool
of talent. It at Michigan too. He picked Patrick Omama out of nowhere. He was a Cincinnati commit, and he had a great career at Michigan. He's still in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Like David Mulk was probably the best center that Michigan's had in a minute here, and. You know, he walked in with Rich Rod to seven offensive linemen, and they were a disaster, and he made them a lot better, and then they were a disaster after he left. So, you know, he's proven that he's an excellent offensive line coach, and I think the upside of having him around is worth kind of not having a established running back coach.
Yeah, figuring it out. And there's a learning curve. I mean, no one's disputing that. I just think that you have a safety net. If you're Jay Harbaugh, And I think Jim had to be thinking this too. I mean, he's not going at it by himself,
right?
You know what I mean? There's a safety net around him that if you need some help, is there to be had. You know, he's a guy that has shown coaching aptitude, and then you also have an alternative down the line probably if you need to go that route of the 10th coach.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we'll see. That's why I said. I mean, I think the guy is playing chess where a lot of other coaches are playing checkers. I think he has this thought out, and one way or the other, he'll work it out.
Yeah, and Frey was actually one of the coaches on Rich Rod's staff who was most under the microscope for being, like, tough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's... I don't think the Free Press is going to get on his case this time. just a guess.
Yeah, he will fit right in with Jim.
Yeah.
He'll fit right in with Jim. And the Free Press is not going to treat Jim like they treated Rich. So there you go. So, you know, it'll be different. And I think if you're Fry, you have to be thinking about that. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, if I step back into this.
Like, you know, is that going to happen again?
Is that going to happen again? And so you had to know, all right, you know, this is Jim Harbaugh. It's a whole different, sort of treatment and acceptance, you know, as far as head coach is concerned.
And one of the really interesting things about the Fry hire is that Indiana is mostly a zone team. So they'll do inside zone, they'll do outside zone, and they'll do some pin and pull stuff. And Michigan has not run outside zone effectively or frequently under Jim Harbaugh. And
you put effectively first, and that's probably why they.
Yeah, you know, yeah,
right. I mean, probably why you don't do it.
Yeah, and Michigan is really gap right now, so this might add some diversity to their game. And of course, you mentioned the spread stuff. Like he was a spread guy under Rodriguez. He was a spread guy under Wilson. So maybe you'll see a little bit more of that. I still think we're going to see a lot of man ball, but you know, the ability to diversify what Michigan brings is also a positive of the hire.
All right.
I have to agree with that. I have to believe that we'll see more zone blocking.
If they can be more effective at it. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I think the way you phrased it, I think was perfect. They haven't run it effectively. If they had run it effectively, I think they would run it more. But it's like, so maybe he can help add to that. And that part of that might be personnel too. So you know, we'll see. It's 9:46 on a Thursday. We got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA.
Michigan rides on golden.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. We are live here inside the Emden studio. So, guys, want to get a little basketball chat in here. Big game tonight and a tough matchup, in my opinion. I've been harping on this for a couple of days now. I think it's a very tough matchup for Michigan with the backcourt that they're going to face tonight versus Indiana.
Well, I mean, the good news is that Indiana has had some personnel losses, so they're pretty small. I mean, they have Bryant, but OG Anunoby is out for the season.
Colin Hartman.
Yeah, they've got.
Well, Hartman never played, I don't think.
No, but they knew he would. Yeah, they knew he would be out. That's been.
But their front court's pretty thin, so Michigan should be able to cope. Maybe we'll see. Could be a game where you could get away with Irvin at the four.
Question is, can they stay in front of their guards?
No.
Can they?
Well, but Indiana's defense is terrible, so shootout.
And you know, it's funny. So when I talked to Beeline yesterday, and you know, set it up the same way with you guys. Like, you know, it's an interesting matchup for you guys because they're so good on the perimeter. They can really, really shoot it. They can put it on the floor. They really took advantage of Michigan State, a team that's typically pretty good defensively, kind of abused them. And Beeline said, yeah, you know, this is a team that, you know, in many instances, you know, you almost have to just outscore them. And he wasn't saying that's what they're going to have to do. He was not. I want to make it clear. He wasn't saying that's what they were going to have to do.
But that's what they're going to have to do.
That's what they're going to have to do. Yeah. I mean, this is hopefully a game that DJ and Mo can block some shots when those guys come into the paint, slow them down a little bit that way. You know, I mean, maybe the guys put a great perimeter defense effort out there.
I mean,
see the game is really close.
As long as they're shooting two-point jumpers, I think Michigan can keep pace. If they're going to have one of those games where they're, you know, 12 of 10 from three, like half the Big Ten is put up against Michigan, then that's obviously a problem. So, you know, have them run, shoot those little floaters and do whatever, but, you know, try to keep them off the three-point line.
Two games does not create a pattern, Craig, but it does. Yeah. It does appear that for the last two games, just those two games, that they're at least they've been competent on the defensive end of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they've improved. Michigan has improved in the Illinois game, and also I think the Wisconsin game to some degree. We've improved as a defensive team. I mean, I think to some extent also we overestimated that there wasn't 40 points of difference between the two Illinois games, for example, and the Michigan's defense. Just Illinois came out in the game there and couldn't miss. Maverick Morgan looked like an All-American, and he isn't. And they shoot 9 of 14 from 3, and 10 of those 14 shots were checked. And they come into Ann Arbor, and they shoot 2 of 12 from 3, and they're the ordinary general Illinois team that can't shoot the ball at all. But still, I think it's fair to conclude that we did play somewhat tougher on the interior in the second time around against Illinois, and this does look like an improving team. I agree with, I think, Ed and Brian. This game tonight's pretty much a toss-up. I think Ken Pom has it as a one-point Michigan win, something like that.
That doesn't account for the injury, and so I'm just looking at the markets. They opened at Michigan as a two-point favorite, and it's 3.5 some places, which I think is like my efficiency numbers like Michigan by like 2. And so if you give another point for Anunoby.
Yeah, so it's essentially a random game. I mean, it's a key game for Michigan because I mean, I don't think we match up very well against Michigan State, even though Michigan State's got all kinds of warts and looks like they may not make the NCAAs. There's a chance they won't.
Brian is looking, you know, he's looking a bit perplexed.
Well, you know, for teams that I think Michigan doesn't match up well with, Purdue leads the list.
Purdue is a disaster.
I but, like, you know, Michigan State, they have, like, one post player as a true freshman.
Wait, why is Purdue... I mean, I know they got Swanigan guys inside, but I mean, they're not going to get to the basket and expose the perimeter defense like in Indiana.
Well, they
don't. Right?
They can just throw bricks up at the board.
They can just toss it into Haas.
Right.
I mean, they don't need to.
But I mean, the rebounding margin in that game will be interesting to watch.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm less. I mean, I know our rebounding hasn't been good, but I'm more concerned about dribble drive defense than the boards.
Well, not many college basketball teams look like Purdue anymore. Where they have two legitimate bigs. Mm-hmm. You have Swanigan, who's averaging a double-double a game.
Well, we got two bigs now, playing regularly.
Yeah, they're a little bit less thick.
Yeah, and it's going to be a much tougher. Imagine Maverick Morgan, but with skill. with consistent skill.
With anger and
more size and strength. Yeah, that's Haas. And then Swanigan is...
Swanigan's a beast, yeah. They're going to have... Everyone has issues with Caleb Swanigan,
I mean,
right?
Ivan Drago is just... I'm so like, why is that guy at Purdue? Why isn't he... But anyway, like, he's...
That's a game where maybe we'll see your guy. Maybe we'll see... they might have to play some Teskey in that game.
Seriously. I mean, anyway... But Michigan State has one front court player. They have one guy taller than 6'6". So
yeah, Nick Ward.
That doesn't strike me as a bad matchup for Michigan.
I disagree. I think Nick Ward will be a disaster for us unless he gets it. You know, he tends to get into foul trouble. But unless he does, I see him as a very, very difficult matchup for our guys in the post. And
that one doesn't scare me as much either, Craig. I really think that's a game where Mo Wagner can
he can do take advantage against Hap. Like,
I,
right?
I think so too. Yeah. Now I think it's the guy. The guy is fella from Flint.
Bridges.
Yeah, Miles Bridges.
Bridges, yeah. Bridges Dude. Is phenomenal. I mean, he's one of the best two players in the Big Ten along with Swanigan, I think. In my opinion at least. And so yeah, he's a load. We'll have a hard time checking him, but I still think in the end Ward will be the guy who gives us the most trouble in that game. We'll see, but that's my impression.
Yeah, he's giving Izzo a whole lot of problems. I haven't seen Izzo go back and forth with a player, certainly not a freshman. I mean, it was like I got to give it to Nick Ward. He was giving it as good as he was getting in that exchange on the sideline, because Izzo was yelling at him, and the kid was yelling back.
Yeah, he showed
me something. This was the Purdue game.
Okay,
this was a Purdue game, and he was like, man. Look, coach. I was like, leave me the hell alone. You know?
I think Michigan State's going to make the tournament. I mean,
I don't know. What are they right now? 12-9. They're going to have to win some. Win some games.
So the question is here in closing: are you guys? I know we're going to do this on a weekly basis, but are you feeling any better about Michigan?
I am. I mean, you have a couple games where their defense is merely bad and not terrible. And you kind of see, like, you know, a couple of guys coming into their own. Like, Wilson had a really good game against Illinois. Had that, like, Jordan-esque drive to the hoop where he just hung there with the ball. I was like, if you can do that, why don't you do that more often?
He's capable. I feel the same as last week. I mean, we saw the three-point defense kind of regressing to where it should have been. I still think this team can get hot and go on a run.
Yeah. All right.
I think
I'm slightly more optimistic just because of regression to the mean. Teams can't, you know, the last two games, teams are shooting 28% against us from the three, and I think it'll fall in at about 35% and for the rest of the way out. And so I'm just on that alone. And I think they are, I agree with Brian to some extent that they're, maybe to a large extent, that they are an improving defensive team.
And I hope Michigan's a little angry tonight, too, because Indiana fans continue to remind me of the 25-0 run from last year. So
I think it was 26, wasn't it? Was it 25?
Yeah. All I remember is I posted a picture where it was the Tom Hanks getting hijacked in that movie, and I just said, "Where are the Rutgers now?" That's what I remember from that game. So
it was a bad game. I hope they're a little angry.
I didn't like that game.
All right, that'll do it for today's show, folks. Coming up next is Inside the Huddle with Michael Spath, followed by the Jim Rome Show at noon, M Zone at 3, All E Show at 6:30, and of course, Michigan basketball versus Indiana tonight. Listen to it on our sister station, 102.9 W4 Country. Coverage of that picks up at 8:30 tomorrow. We'll talk to Nicole Arts, John U. Bacon, and more here on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor.
Better than us!
No!